Welcome to Movie Richard's Movie Month, where the Atlantic Voice Network's very own in-house critic, Movie Richard, looks at what's out and about to be out at your local multiplex. I'm Zeph, and here now, the man at the concession stand, Movie Richard.
It's Movie Richard's Movie Month for February. Movie Richard is here. Movie Richard, how are you, my friend?
Pretty good. I'm 29 years old as of January 5th, so the gray hairs are coming in.
Oh.
I'm getting out of the bed. It's tougher now. So, yeah, I'm just enjoying life, ready for spring.
Talk about gray hair, man. Wait till you get to my indeterminate middle age.
Yeah.
And the gray hair's coming.
35.
It's a fact of life, yeah.
35.
But yes, life has been treating you well, yeah?
Yes, sir. Real quick, I have to shout out, and I'm 10 years late, Friday Night Lights. The show has taken over my life. I can't stop watching it. I have to shout out the NBA for a great All-Star weekend, much better than the one they gave us in Charlotte last week. Team LeBron, 3-0. I have to shout out Anthony Joshua, about to have a big fight. To shout out Tyson Fury, who's has a big, big fight coming up this weekend, so life is good. We're ready to do it.
I'm surprised you have any time to see movies because your TV / sports schedule is full.
Absolutely.
But that's a different show.
Absolutely.
So you have been at the multiplex. Let's get straight to it because
yes,
we have a packed show this week. We're going to go back over the Oscars. We're going to give Richard a chance to break down Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Now that if you care, then you should have seen it so he can speak spoiler-free.
Yes,
but
sir.
Let's start with anything that you've seen recently.
I've seen recently Bad Boys, the new one. I've seen
Bad Boys 3, right?
Yes, Bad Boys 3. A very good film. Surprise, Martin Lawrence, Will Smith. We kind of expected it to be kind of a modern Fast and Furious with these guys. It ended up being a really good film.
Really?
A lot of good action. And it did very well at the box office. I'll definitely go see the fourth one because when I saw this one, I thought, what else can they possibly do? I thought it was just going to be Bad Boys 2 on steroids. Did a great job. I saw the new Harley Quinn film with Margot Robbie, which is strange because
it's quite well reviewed, though, isn't
it?
Yeah, Harley Quinn.
It's honestly, I was really skeptical because of the trailers. I was really skeptical because I felt like they released it. It took too long to release it after Suicide Squad, which was horrible. But you know what? It was a good film. It was a good film. I'm kind of surprised it's flopping. I would say in the last 7 years, ratings-wise, it's probably the second best DC film they've made behind Wonder Woman, which is still different place.
So, yeah. But let me ask you on that point then, that you are surprised that it's flopping. You liked it. You found it entertaining. Do you have any theories then as to why it's a film and characters that just don't seem to have taken? Do you think it might have anything to do with the fact that Suicide Squad was not well received?
Well, yeah, I think it's two main points. First off, Suicide Squad was a lot of male viewers was not well received, but Harley Quinn was the standout. And I thought it would have been in the best interest of DC to kind of pump this movie out within a year of Suicide Squad, because when Suicide Squad came out, the next Halloween, which is probably like 4 to 6 months afterwards, everybody was Harley Quinn. I think if they would have had it come out like that December with the steam kind of going and Suicide Squad but Margot Robbie was great, I think it would have been a lot better. And I think what they kind of did was they didn't advertise it very well. I thought that the title Birds of a Prey, if you don't know what it is and if you haven't seen the trailer, I don't know what that film is. I think they should have centered it around Harley Quinn in the beginning with the title. And if you've been keeping up with what DC's doing now, they've changed the title and added Harley Quinn's name to it.
Do you think that that's arguably sort of part of the problem? Because as you said, Suicide Squad, and I remember when Suicide Squad came out.
Yeah.
And while we didn't give it a lot of coverage on the show, in conversation, you weren't a fan of it.
Not at all.
So maybe, do you think perhaps they're stuck between a rock and a hard place? If you attached your sequel clearly to a first movie that wasn't well received, you almost have to hold it at arm's length without holding it at arm's length. This is weird sort of paradox that they're caught in.
Yeah. But I think what a lot of us thought they were going to do, which is not so much focus on Suicide Squad itself, but really focus around Margot Robbie. I would have thought you'd see Margot Robbie everywhere. I would have thought you would have seen her popping up.
She's a star.
She's a big star. And she was probably Will Smith, the only good part of that film. And I'm just surprised. It's almost like someone sat back and said, oh, no, this is money in the bank. We're not going to put all the money in. I think I only saw her on Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay.
I saw her there. But you think you would be seeing her at the MTV Movie Awards. You think you would see it all on social media in the same way that Jennifer Aniston was used to Apple to pump her new show.
I'm just thinking, was she nominated? Was she nominated for an Oscar this year? I think she might have been, but I'm not sure she was nominated. But she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
absolutely,
which was a big nominated movie. Yes, so by extension, what it means is you're going to be at the Oscars, you're going to be on TV, you're going to be name-checked at some level. It does seem like, well, if I'm bringing out a movie with her, there's a great opportunity here to at least, if nothing else, get it some traction.
Yeah, you'd think.
And she is very talented.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's still plenty of us who just love her for a performance in Wolf of Wall Street as Leonardo DiCaprio's wife, which was iconic.
And, of course, Tonya Harding.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, yeah, which is a great film that I don't think a lot of people respect in the way that they should at my age. I think a lot of the critics responded well to it. But, yeah, just kind of back to the point about Harley Quinn, I would think you'd see her at the Nickelodeon Awards. I think she would have been in the same way they kind of did it with Black Panther and Avengers Endgame. These people were everywhere. I mean, Chad Bosnick was at the dunk contest. I think he's tired of putting up the Wakanda sign at this point.
I mean, but you're right, though.
Yeah.
If you want to sell tickets to whatever demographic,
mm-hmm,
whatever demographic, then it is ultimately the strategy is to seek out that demographic.
Yeah.
And you're right. You're talking about MTV Movie Awards or NBA All-Star Game or Nickelodeon Awards or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And the fact that she wasn't even on, that she appeared on Jimmy Kimmel and that was it type thing.
And it wasn't a lot of talking about the film.
No. So at that moment, how can you expect to have a winner?
I don't know.
You can't.
And it's also kind of...
Was there a Super Bowl commercial for it? I think there was.
Yeah. They did do that.
Yeah.
But once again, matter of fact, I remember when it aired, if I'm thinking correctly, a few of my friends were like, oh, dang, I didn't know that was coming out this year.
There you go.
You know, and you go, what? You know, this is probably your biggest film, your biggest current film that DC is going to produce for a while. And if you're competing with Marvel, who just had, what, four great films and Avengers Endgame just came out like within the year, I would think you'd be pushing it. They're pushing Wonder Woman. They're pushing Wonder Woman well.
Well, and here's an interesting thing. Obviously, we are going to circle back to the Oscars much later in the show, but obviously Joker was up for an Oscar, and and while I have no doubt that it was a very different sort of film than Harley Quinn, at the end of the day, you're not speaking to your DC fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand that Joker was sort of aimed at this sort of far more, critical appeal, serious movie, Oscar nominations, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, there's a whole load of dudes giving that a go because they're comic book fans. And would it not make sense to go, oh, by the way, DC comic book fans, have a bit of fun. Harley Quinn's on her way.
And the irony is Harley Quinn is Joker's girlfriend. So you would think with Joker doing that well.
I would never have known that.
That is my point. So you would think with Joker, you would just be saying, oh, yeah, Harley Quinn's coming out. And if you remember, you know, I know more about the issues that Jared Leto, the previous Joker, had in Suicide Squad than I knew about the Harley Quinn movie coming out. So I kind of feel for Margot Robbie. I feel for DC because it's actually a good movie. It's well reviewed. The people I've seen it, there's not a lot wrong with it. But the advertising, the way it's handled, and even the trailers, I thought were just really corny.
You mentioned Wonder Woman. Do you suspect a little bit that perhaps DC's strategy is they're sort of going all in on Wonder Woman?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Unlike because they are getting to the stage where it's almost like you need to start getting it right. You guys need to start having some hits. And you're going all in on making Wonder Woman the biggest film of the year. And then you hope that you can use that as sort of a relaunch point for
it's gonna have
new
to be.
Batman and all kinds of stuff.
You can even tell, I mean, and that's why, as a guy who's not really like a comic book guy, if you were to just watch the Wonder Woman trailer, the new one is coming out like 6 months. Or 3 months now.
Filmed in this fair location.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm looking for Gal Gadot.
We'll talk about that during
the time.
Looking
for Gal Gadot. And to see the Harley Quinn trailers, one looks like it was done by a teenager. The other one looks like it was done by a major motion picture. And all of as they released the initial Wonder Woman trailer, every one that they put out after, well done. Great music, great color, great sound. Great buildup in it. Like, I could watch the Wonder Woman trailer three straight times because of the sound they put with it.
Yeah.
When you watch the Harley Quinn trailer, you're like, it's like a cocky group of kids made something they knew was going to sell and they didn't think much about it. And I think that kind of rubs some people the wrong way, in my opinion. Or they just didn't advertise it enough.
Interesting. Because it got beat at the box office, you were telling me, by Sonic the Hedgehog.
Which I also saw.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Which I also saw and also had very high expectations for, because I'm a Sonic guy.
Who is the celebrity voice?
I don't even know, man. I'll be honest, I didn't.
Because who was Ryan Reynolds? Somebody, he was Pokemon, right?
Yeah, he was in Pokemon, and which is also close to my heart. But no, you know what? Long story short, I don't have to dive into it that much. For a Sonic film?
Okay.
You know, which is, I didn't know what the story was going to be, because the games don't really have a storyline. They just get coins and move on. It was pretty good, man. I'd enjoyed it, because I was just like, what in the world are they going to, how are they going to make a story out of a little blue hedgehog? And then 2 years ago when they announced it, the Sonic they had looked horrible. Yes. It looked like a scary blue cat.
You got to get that right.
And I was like, yeah, this shit, I mean, it's over. But it was good. I enjoyed it.
For anyone who says that movie, Richard, doesn't give everything a go.
I give
the
everything a shot, man.
The fact that we've just had a 1 minute conversation about Sonic the Hedgehog.
I saw it.
Yeah. No one should doubt.
And Pokemon Detective. Commitment. I saw that as well. Yeah, but that was Ryan Reynolds. That was a while ago. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds was Pokemon.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I get all those things.
We're good with that.
Okay. All right, let's get to Star Wars.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do it this way. We are going to hold Richard to account at the end of Star Wars with his predictions, but we will get there shortly. But ultimately, movie Richard, did you... I guess let's start this way. Did you feel that this 2.5-hour movie... on its own, hung together? And then my secondary question to that is, did it complete this latest set of films? Forget all the ones from back in the day. Yeah. Do you feel like, okay, that story has been told to me?
Yes, I do. I thought it held together better than any of the previous new films. I felt a solid amount of closure at the end of it. There were some solid twists in the film. It kind of made me wonder why all of the current Star Wars films weren't directed and held to this standard. I thought it was a really solid film all the way through. I enjoyed it. Would I say it was the best movie I've ever seen? Would I say it's better than The Irishman or Avengers Endgame or some of the films we're going to speak about when we cover the Oscars? I don't know if I'd go that far. But I was thoroughly impressed. I thought it was a very well done Star Wars. I liked it. I really did. I liked the way they told the story. I think they kind of took out some of the cheesy elements that we discussed with the, you know, we're talking to each other through like the Holy Ghost and where all of this weird stuff was going on in the previous films. It felt like a true Star Wars film. I got action. I got a story. I had some faces pop up. Got a little emotional. I saw some lightsabers. I saw the Millennium Falcon. I saw some ships in space shooting one another. I saw some cool crashes. I had some great sound. There was a little bit of a love interest, but not as heavy and corny as the last few. And it had a good ending. And that's all I needed.
Okay, so let me ask you then. So you've used the word solid, but I don't want to use that. You've used the solid in the way that this is a well-crafted, well-made, well-put together that sort of delivered what it said on the box.
Yeah.
And so to then press you on sort of that second part of the question, in terms of, obviously you rank this highly in terms of the very recent set of the movies. Mm-hmm. So I think it's now a foregone conclusion that you feel it brings closure to the current trilogy.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this question then. In leaving it, what did it leave you with, any expectation or desire or, you know, fishing hook bait for something to come next?
I mean,
are we with that then in terms of this? Because this is now movie 9.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say of what's basically a loosely connected set of 9.
Yeah.
You know, there's no character, to be fair, that runs through all of them.
Yeah.
So sort of where are you with that then? Knowing that this was the last one for a little bit while, provided closure on what come before, did it sate your appetite?
Yeah, I walked away with two feels. One, I really appreciated the level of detail in this film, and I feel like they started handling a lot of little small things that were overlooked in the last one. For instance, just remove corny conversations between characters that ultimately have nothing to do with what's going on. In the last two or three films, there were just a few situations where, for instance, Kylo Ren and Rey are like conversating through the Force back and forth for like an entire movie.
Couldn't stand that aspect.
I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. I just thought that was just too. The first one or two times, I'm like, okay, they cut stuff like that out. These kind of forced in, maybe you should like this idea, and they just kept it very simple. When character A speaks to character B, we're speaking about the story. When character B makes a joke, the joke's kind of quick. We don't kill the joke. We don't stick to that joke for another 45 seconds. Then we're back into the story. Then we're back into the mission. We're still focused on the objective. It was all kind of linear in a way that made the movie very easy to follow. And you're not looking with the people that you're sitting with in the audience like, why did they do this? Why is this person speaking about that? The comic relief was perfectly timed this time around and not forced. The interaction between Kylo Ren and Rey, the main characters, felt a little bit more fluid and natural and believable.
Okay.
The sound, which I've always thought Star Wars has great sound in terms of whether it be a spaceship or the lightsaber, to me it sounded a lot sharper. I even picked up on some delays in the last film where I'm literally seeing a lightsaber hit another lightsaber and you're hearing it, meow, like 4 seconds later.
Was it IMAX?
Yes.
Did you see it in IMAX?
I've seen all of them in IMAX.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen all of them.
So IMAX. Does it do justice? Does it do justice to the format, or does the format do justice to it? I don't know. Whichever way one wants to.
Yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend it in IMAX. Okay. I'm not absolutely sure which does which to which, but I would say this: when they're in space and they're going at high speeds in their ships, IMAX takes that to an entirely different level, which I want to also cover in a film we're going to discuss in a second. It really did it justice. And then even some of the times when the Force was used, you can kind of hear it coming in and it builds and then it's used, which kind of adds like an explosive value to it. As where in some of the previous films, it's like the person uses the Force the exact same way in point A and point B, and it's super loud one time, and it's low and subtle the other time, and it just makes me confused. This time, everything was consistent. When someone used the Force, it looked the same consistently, okay. And you could understand how they were using it, and you could feel the buildup. When someone ran to a ship, you could hear every single step. When they got into the ship, it wasn't as much make-believe, like, oh, there's a guy with a gun next to my head, and something out of the ground kills him. They had everything handled in a logical fashion. I really appreciated that. When you saw one ship shoot another ship's wing, the ship couldn't fly straight anymore. Just little small things like that in the previous films I felt like they rushed through.
Okay.
There was also one scene where a ship was kind of coming out of water. And this ship was from one of the previous films. This ship was probably 25 stories long.
Okay.
I remember in previous films when you see something like that happen, let's say that same ship was coming out of the water, there would be water all over the ship if it's coming out of the water.
Okay.
In previous films, you know, you see water coming out of the back. You don't see water on the front of the ship. And it makes you think about things you shouldn't even be thinking about when you're in a film. I felt like they smoothed all of this over in this film. So the special effects were on point and consistent. The acting was a little bit more logical. The conversations were kind of to the point. The comic relief was perfectly timed. The fights were very well choreographed. The storyline was easier to follow and nuanced in ways that people who don't follow Star Wars could kind of pick up on things that were going on. I liked that. One of the people that I went with had seen like one Star Wars film in their whole life, and they could kind of get it.
Okay.
Without feeling completely left out.
That is the thing for any of these series. That if you're not already in it, well,
what's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah. And she felt like, okay, I can get this. Okay, Luke Skywalker, boom, boom. Okay, I see light versus black. Okay, I got it. Versus it being kind of overly complex and with a lot of plot loopholes.
So moving forward then.
Yeah.
And we talked on I think it was maybe our November show where we talked about The Mandalorian that you've been watching on Disney Plus, which
big
is which is a Star Wars property, Star Wars characters. What's your expectation for this whole thing moving forward now? Do you have an expectation?
Yeah, I do.
Are you like, okay, whatever? Or is it more like, oh, I don't care, drop something on me?
For me personally, I'm in the same place with Star Wars that I am with like Transformers, where I am with even Planet of the Apes that ended with three good modern films. Let's take a break from the films. Let's. I want to miss it. I want it to be a good 3 to 5 to 7 years before I see another one. I would love for them to continue to push content like The Mandalorian and side stories through apps to try to maybe re-image some of what Star Wars is. Because what I've walked away with as well is this was the best of the last 4 modern recent films that they made. And I don't want to start another situation where for the next 5 Decembers, they put out 4 films and 3 of them are average and the final one is good. I'd rather them take a good 3, 5, 7 years, maybe bring in some new directors, some new ideas, maybe re-image it a little bit, maybe give us some tips of what to expect through The Mandalorian and other projects, and then come back with it. Come back to Star Wars with something a little bit fresher when people haven't had as much access to the films. Rey and these characters are kind of off in their own film careers, a new cast, and just something fresh. I don't need to see any more of this. I don't ever need to hear Luke Skywalker's name ever again.
So you do feel that this story
is done, and for me,
is done. And I mean, like, yeah, Darth Vader, Emperor's Luke Skywalker, you know. And it's as much. So you would be happy, because obviously, I don't need to read through the lines. You were unimpressed with Solo.
Yes, didn't,
which
like
was
it at
sort
all.
Of an attempt to create a spin-off with some sort of existing relationship to the new thing, to the current thing. Yeah. Do you think for Star Wars, it's a question of, okay, let's put that book up on the shelf, pull down a new book with new characters, and now and again there will be a nod to something that's come before. But again, I mean, because it does feel like there's really not much more to tell with any of these dudes.
Yeah, I don't, in a perfect world, and I doubt this is going to happen because they have so much content that they can draw from, I would love for them to just start completely fresh. Not draw from a book, not draw from anything in the past. Using Star Wars, literally the next film, whenever it comes out, hopefully 5 to 7 years, and telling a completely new story that no one at this particular time has read or can have an opinion on.
Okay.
So we're starting completely fresh. If you want to kind of nod in some of the previous films, that's cool. But I would like for them to start completely fresh, kind of in the way that, in a weird way, Jurassic Park did, was going from it being more about the dinosaurs and then bringing in a main character like Chris Pratt and rebranding it around a star with the dinosaurs. I just need to see something different.
For me
personally.
So you do feel it's now maxed out?
For me personally,
it's
absolutely
right at the moment where perhaps it's overstaying is welcome, but because it's not, you're like, okay, I can live with this. And
I'm good with The Mandalorian. You know, if you want to tell me anything about the past characters, do it through a series like that, because it's very well funded, quality content. But I don't need to see Star Wars Episode 10, which is going to continue this at any level in 3 years.
Do you feel you need to see, and this is a hard question to ask, because the reality of the answer is already different, and I now reference The Mandalorian. If I were to say to you, Rise of Skywalker, we are done now with Star Wars the property. We are done with it in the same way that I know there's rumors that there's another Raiders of the Lost Ark movie, maybe, but we're done with it now. That's your lot. Would you be satisfied with that? I'm not saying would you be happy about it, because I think you like the characters and thing, but would you go, yep, that was a franchise. It did its thing.
Yeah.
It is now done and moved on.
I could do that.
Okay.
In the same way that I believe there's with Lord of the Rings, good. Don't need to see anything else.
Okay. That's a great example.
Yeah, Harry Potter, good.
Or 5. Okay.
Don't need to see anything else. If they were like, we're going to close the book on this, we're done, and that's actually what we mean, I could live with that for sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go to your predictions.
Yeah.
And let's see how we did here. All right. So we asked you, would any major character die? You said yes.
Absolutely.
Are you correct?
Yes, I am.
Because you said here that Rey dies after falling in love with Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren dies after falling in love
with Rey.
All right,
so I'm going to give him a mark.
That's close.
You did pretty good.
She kind of died, and then he was almost dead, and he saved her from dying. So
but he
died. Right, yeah. But she died.
So you know something?
It's right in the middle.
I'm going to give you that. Come too hard about how super accurate you were.
Yeah, I mean,
because otherwise I'm going to challenge you and go, yeah, but she kind of died and didn't. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
she didn't die.
Okay,
so I'm going to give you major character dies.
Yeah.
Ren becomes a good guy. You had said no, that Ren convinces Rey to be bad. That's what you would say.
Yeah, yeah. I was close, but she didn't.
He dies good guy, though,
yeah,
doesn't he?
He dies good guy. Okay. Yeah, so she. There were moments where it looked like she was going to go that way, but I would have to say I was wrong on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, he all came right. over to the light side, kind of.
I asked you, would the Death Star be in it? Your answer was a definitive, I hope so.
Yeah.
So explain to me how the Death Star is in it that satisfies that for you, if you feel you have been satisfied by it.
I didn't really feel that I was satisfied by it.
Okay.
Man. Yeah, I just would...
So, and I'm going to ask a serious, so yeah. I'm going to let you answer, and I'm going to ask a serious question yeah. based on what seems like a throwaway moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you that question now then. The fact that the Death Star isn't really in it.
Yeah.
Is that a problem for you?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that dude sitting there. I can understand if someone says to me, oh, there was no lightsaber battle. Yeah, I get that. Because that's part of the thing.
Yeah, I get it. I don't know, man. I'm a Darth Vader guy.
Okay.
I'm always on the bad guys guy. I'm a hope the Death Star destroys everything guy. I enjoyed that element of Rogue One, which I wasn't a huge fan of. And I just thought it would have been really cool to somehow have a fully functioning Death Star in this film at some level.
Okay.
And they didn't really scratch that itch for me.
Okay.
It was referenced a few times. And I think there was even an image, if I remember correctly. But it wasn't really in the film.
Any new cute animals?
Yeah, I don't know what their names were. But yeah, there were... it wasn't like a Jar Jar Binks where it was like it was clear as day like a character. But yeah, there were a few scenes where they're flying over things and you see these little beautiful creatures that probably would kill you. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yes on that.
Okay. Were there any Darth Vader flashbacks? How is he referenced?
Kinda.
Okay, so my question is, with all seriousness, did they get that right?
I think this is one of the only things where...
Do they need to get it right? Does he need to be referenced? I don't know.
It's tough because he was referenced, and I consider myself like a regular Star Wars lover. Like, I just go see the films. I don't read all of the books and graphic novels and stuff.
Okay.
I could kind of understand that he was referenced, but the people that the other teachers that I know who were all about the graphic novels and stuff, they completely got the reference and were like, well, how did you miss it? No. My thing, I think that the only area in that film where I'm like, you could have been a little bit more clear, I think they just sort of said, okay, this is Darth Vader. This is what this character is drawn from. There's a direct connection. They were kind of too passive and subtle with it. And if you don't read the graphic novels, you could have completely missed it. I didn't get all of that element of the film at all, to be honest with you. I was a little disappointed. Because if there's not another film coming out after this one that's going to go in depth and explain, I don't see what would have been the big deal about just saying, okay, Kylo Ren is directly related at some level to Darth Vader, and just like show the connection in 45 seconds versus we have the skull, we have the helmet, he's drawing energy from the helmet, but they're like, no one's saying the name. That's one thing I didn't care for. Just say, okay, it's Darth Vader's skull. You're heavily influenced by it. Boom.
Did feel a bit like trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Hey, let's have a little bit of Darth Vader connection
here,
to keep these guys happy.
Only for the insiders.
But it's like, let's not bother at all.
Dude, this is not ESPN Plus. Just show me the regular channel.
Show me the regular channel. Would the movie climax with a space battle? Your answer was no, and you said that a lightsaber duel would be the big finish.
Well, it was kind of both.
It was kind of both.
So yeah. I was like right and wrong. In the last 15 minutes of the film, you get a lot of both. So I think you gave me half a point for that.
Okay.
One. Well done as well. I was really impressed.
And so the final question. And I think that in a strange way, you know, we were laughing about this, but it cut so much to the core of the new movies and how do you feel now that they're over and what do you want next? The last question we asked was, obviously, Billy Dee Williams returns as an aging Lando, the original owner of the Millennium Falcon. Did they get Lando right when they brought him back? Your answer was no.
They did.
Did they do him justice or was it just like, oh, yeah, by the way, here's a dude here.
They did.
Hey, fans, here's Billy.
No, they it was cool how they did it. And you know, it's funny, the majority of these questions I remembered going into the film.
That's a past your expectation then.
Yeah, that was one that I forgot. So then I'd even forgot he was going to be in the film. So when I saw it and he popped up, I was like, oh, that was well done. And it wasn't like, hey, I'm here, okay, I'm out. Like, his role was just enough.
Okay.
Just enough. Because when he kind of popped up, I was like, I hope they don't take 10 minutes and having this turn into a really dramatic situation and he dies and we're kind of moving away from what is going on to focus on giving his character closure. And no, he popped up. He's kind of funny. Had some cool lines. I was in a lot of the action scenes moving forward. Had some great, like, quotable lines with the younger characters. It was cool. It was in a crucial moment in the film. I really enjoyed that. Surprised. Okay. Really surprised by that.
Because it could have been done wrong. Yeah. It could have just been a roll-on cameo or, like, And
they took their time and did it the right way. I was impressed.
Really?
Because I definitely thought they were going to mess that up.
Because I still feel a little bit that the modern series has, fair or foul, attempted to roll with some of those guys, and it kind of worked. I don't know. I think it's inconsistent how it's worked. That's
extremely fair.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like, and I don't, not about the actors, although what I'm going to say actually in a strange way undercuts my opinion. I thought I got Han Solo just right. But to be fair, I think Han Solo, to an effect, is carried by the fact that I'm now going to put the boot in. And I mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, Harrison Ford has not really been in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So when he showed up in The Force Awakens playing one of his iconic characters, just right.
I thought that was perfect.
And I now don't mean this as a criticism that Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill are not great actors, but I felt like
they wore them out, man. They wore those two characters out. It
really didn't kind of sort of do them justice. It was just
too much, man. Yeah. It was to the point where if they felt, and rest in peace, Princess Leia, if they felt that strongly about those two characters, I would have rather them taken the 2 hours in the last few films that they
make it their movies.
Yeah,
make it
and
their movies.
Get rid of the Solo film and give make them their own movies. Because it was.
Yes.
At first, I was like, cool. And then you go, okay. And then you go, okay. And it's like, all right.
It's been an odd. Yeah, if anything, it's been the oddest. And I get it from a perspective, from a creative perspective, it's been a really hard act to juggle and pull off.
Yeah.
The notion of feeling like you have to tie generations together, but then you also have to play them. And again, if you have too much Harrison Ford and too much Luke Skywalker, then it doesn't give you any time, you know, for your new characters.
Takes away from the film.
That's part of the problem.
Daisy Ridley should be a much bigger star than she is. And I wonder if some of the way she was handled in the previous film speaks to that. Because a lot of screen time was going to people that ultimately are irrelevant in these films. Like if we're moving away from the previous trilogy and really trying to build new characters, I feel like they wasted a lot of time going so in depth. Like the train, like when
after such a great start, I did feel I agree with you 100% there.
Too much, man. Like Mark Hamill's character,
she should be a household name in the way, and I'm not suggesting she's not a household name, but what I mean, she should now be potential level of, and I know it's an unfair comparison because of the order that their careers have unfolded, but I feel unfortunately she should be a bigger star.
Definitely.
And I'm not suggesting she should be Scarlett Johansson, but Daisy Ridley should now show up in anything and you just sit in your bike.
Yeah, I mean, you got 3 films as a lead in Star Wars. How is Star Wars not as big at least as Hunger Games?
Right.
You know,
that's a great example. Jennifer Lawrence took her to the next level.
And I mean, I still think, and I could be wrong, I still think if you were to say, oh yeah, Daisy Ridley's in it to certain people, it'd take them a second to realize to certain your common fan who you're speaking about. Oh, the girl from Star Wars, Jennifer Lawrence. Do you even have to say Hunger Games anymore?
Well, I mean, to be fair though, it is almost a sort of history repeating itself in that Harrison Ford had to put himself at arm's length from Star Wars. He had very much sort of a not love-hate relationship, but he was slightly ambivalent about being in it. And I think, you know, his career, he went and found Raiders. So he found a franchise that was all him. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. It was all him. And so therefore, at that moment, he could establish himself beyond being Han Solo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he found a second role in the same way that...
Whereas Carrie Fisher really didn't, and Mark Hamill has... No, not that they want to. Mark Hamill's done all kinds of stuff. Yeah. He has the most fascinating... Again, people... You know, we talk DC.
Yeah.
being the voice of Joker in the cartoons, people will tell you he's second place in everyone's poll in terms of the greatest Joker. But it was interesting, and I worry a little bit with Daisy Ridley that at some moment her, and to a lesser extent, you know, John Boyega,
they
now need their second. In a strange way, this vehicle hasn't put them out in front of the multiplex. They now need to find something else to do that for them.
Yeah,
and that's the biggest shame of it.
JB, John Boyega, I would have thought this would have taken him to a whole different place, in the same way that Black Panther did for Chad, or Creed did for Michael B. Jordan.
It's the nature of Star Wars, isn't it?
It didn't.
Star Wars is bigger.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And it's interesting. It's interesting because, like you said, if we were talking about this 4 years ago, I would think you'd be seeing these people everywhere. I'll give you and I wasn't a big Game of Thrones person, but I'll give you an analogy that I kind of see. The lead female for Game of Thrones who played...
Emilia Clarke, is that who it is?
Yeah, Emilia Clarke.
Because I'm not a Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah, me neither. Great actress in that, big fanfare. I feel similarly with her situation and Daisy Ridley. As big as Game of Thrones was, she's been in other films, and Game of Thrones had at least opened that door for her, but she's not been able to escape it. I would have thought that bare minimum, Daisy Ridley would have that. Oh, yeah, the young girl from Star Wars. She's trying something new. I want to see what it's about. I'm not hearing her name.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that Star Wars role transition her into other things that people at least give a chance.
Yeah.
As to where with Emilia Clarke, you go, oh, Game of Thrones. Yeah, I want to see what she can do next. I'm not hearing people say
that. She does
need,
it's interesting. I think you doubt, you know, in the way that Harrison Ford found the perfect vehicle for him next.
Yeah.
I think for Daisy Ridley, I remember she was in Murder in the Orient Express, but that was in a cast with so many other dudes.
I forgot she was in that, man.
Right, because there's just so many other people. Yeah. Going, oh, there's so-and-so. Yeah. Oh, there's so-and-so. Yeah. Which is the point of Murder in the Orient Express. She almost needs to be in the perfect small ensemble.
Yeah. She needs a marriage story. She needs a marriage story.
Well, she needs that, or she needs the small ensemble, you know, something tighter, like an Avengers movie. Maybe a Fantastic Four type thing where she's in it with other people and she can do her thing and she can spread her wings, but she's not getting lost in an all-star cast.
You know who the winner for me in all of this is, acting-wise? Adam Driver. Because I think all this has done is shown...
Sean's a great actor, isn't he? He's fabulous.
Incredible. I mean, that...
Fabulous actor.
He's incredible in this. He's incredible in the series Girls. He's incredible in Marriage Story. He's incredible in the Black Klansman.
Great movie about him where he's a bus driver too, and I can't remember the name of that.
I'm sure. I just agree with you. I haven't even seen it.
Great.
I look at him now.
Buy it.
Yeah. I'd completely go and watch it. I look at him now and go, that was the definitive actor. That's the guy we found in the beginning of this. I kind of knew. And then 3 years later, just showed his range as an actor in a variety of films. And then even in this one.
Because you could be on a hide into nothing with that part.
Oh, yeah,
when we mentioned the Darth Vader thing,
absolutely.
You could end up being lost as the Darth Vader stand-in.
Yeah. And that's half the reason people, I don't like Solo.
He made it his own.
This generation, they're not Darth Vader people. They're Kylo Ren guy,
yeah.
And it's because of Adam Driver. I have to say that I would have never thought he'd be the big winner in all this. I'm very happy for him. He deserves it.
Yeah.
He deserves it. But, yeah, I'm glad to now close that book.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope to see that and when my kids, and I have no kids and no wife, I hope to see that when they're around 15. Just so we're clear.
All right, talking to winners, let's move on to Oscars. Yeah. Back after the show. I goes without saying. So I'm going to give you your entry-level question.
Yes.
Obviously, because you sat and watched it. Is this thing still a watchable TV show? Because I'm going to tell you something. I watched it in its entirety for the first time in about 4 years.
Yeah.
And I meant watched it without reading the paper or having my computer or switching over for 20 minutes or leaving the room. I sat and I watched it start to finish.
Yeah.
Do you think this is still relevant as a TV show?
Man.
3.5 hours long, man.
That's a lot of...
On a Sunday night. That's not a holiday weekend.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. That's The Irishman.
And, yeah.
I don't know if it was that entertaining. I don't know anymore. I don't know about the Oscars. Something has to change. 3.5 hours for that.
Because I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this before we get into the awards themselves. Yeah. There's always this narrative about the Oscars and the show's ratings and people immediately equate it to how popular the movies were that year.
Yeah.
And should the two things even be related?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, one's a super long TV show.
Yeah.
That has absolutely nothing to do. You can have, this could have been a year with one of those all-star years of movies where everyone's seen those movies. And while we all might have hung through the 3.5 hours because we liked those movies, it didn't change the fact this 3.5 hours moves slow and it don't really go anywhere.
Yeah, something just has
Something's
got to
be done with this TV show.
And you know what's sad?
The same way that the NFL have made every effort to move games along, then the Oscars need to do the same
and
thing.
And the same way the MLB is struggling with attendance and they're trying to possibly rechange the playoffs. You know what's sad? I think both of us deep down know that the answer to this is no, it's not very watchable. But because of what it is, neither one of us wants to admit it. If I was completely honest with you, unless there's just a groundbreaking film that comes out between now and next year, I might just have to catch the highlights.
There were 14 songs. I read online there were 14 songs. And as much as I loved seeing Eminem, I'm thinking, why is this here?
That was very strange.
I can understand
strange.
If we didn't have enough content to fill it out in 3 hours. But I'm like, Eminem showing up and we're already running over?
That was
I couldn't understand
strange.
So many of the choices that are made.
Yeah, I just the higher-ups need to sit down and figure something out.
This has got to be a better TV show.
Yeah, it's got to be better. I would, and they got to chop some time off.
Yeah.
And maybe with some of the Oscars...
Because they didn't have a host. So in the past, they've gone, host. Well, they had no host. And it still went half an hour long.
They can't do that again. I know that as well. This no host stuff, they need to figure it out. And they need somebody with a lot of charisma. And they need somebody who can maybe crack some jokes on some of this content and keep the pace at a comfortable place. Because it was just, I felt like I was in class. And I don't like that feeling.
Why does though, didn't it? There are moments there around like you know, sort of 9:30. You're sitting like going, ooh.
Because
I always watch the dead person's montage.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, oh, wow, okay. I've still got 45 minutes to that. What are they going to do for me now?
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's, you know, and this is, I've taken a lot of heat from this, and I will continue to. And now I dare people to watch both. Watch the MTV Movie Awards and watch this. And tell me which one's more entertaining.
No, you're not wrong.
And the MTV Movie Awards is like 2 hours and 30.
You're not wrong.
Tell me if you couldn't watch another hour of that versus take an hour away from the Oscars.
You're not wrong.
I can't. It's nice to see the actors at the MTV Movie Awards being normal people in regular clothes, having a good time, joking around, getting to be a little bit more... Not as politically correct when they're having it. It's just a fun time. And it's a lot of the same films. Parasite's going to win everything at that as well. But you get to see the person side of it. The only thing I enjoyed about the Oscars from that perspective was Brad Pitt, because he's apparently just saying what he wants to say in everything now. And I kind of like that he's just being himself. But yeah, I don't know about the Oscars. It was so awkward for me that... I don't know if I'm going to – I don't know if I need to watch the Oscars or the Grammys moving forward. That's all I have to say about that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So let's get to the actual awards themselves, and we're going to sort of – I'm going to let you dip in and out as we go.
Absolutely.
I guess you have to start with, did they get it right this year? I mean, it's such a subjective thing. Did they get it right?
Yeah.
What did they get wrong?
I'm looking at
got Best Picture, Best Actor, supporting directors. Is there anything? Anyone that you think got omitted, either nomination wise or in terms of actually getting the trophy?
You know what?
And is there anything that they got wrong that you're sitting going, seriously?
Absolutely. Seriously? Best Picture, with films that were nominated, and I saw Parasite, and you can order Parasite on your cable box right now. It's a good film. It's a very good film. Is it better than 1917? Is it better than The Irishman? Is it better than Marriage Story? Is it better than Joker? Is it better than Avengers Endgame? No, it's not.
It's a pretty packed field.
Yeah,
it's
just not. I'm happy for South Korea. I'm happy for the director. It was a very good film, and it touched on a lot of social issues in that part of the world that are very similar to ours, as well as being a little bit different. But... I'm a little surprised, man.
Who would have been your winner?
If I could pick any movie or based on what was nominated?
Based on what was nominated, who would have been your winner? And I made reasons. In my mind, I have not seen 1917. And I think, you know, from the summer, I would have been all in on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah,
I like The Irishman a lot, but I've said this in conversation.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie before.
It's
fair or foul. I've seen that movie before from that crew of people.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think, would have been my best picture. 1917 and Irishman would have been right behind it. If we're talking about films that were nominated. Yeah, I just can't.
I mean, Parasite ran the table. It ran the table. It got best original screenplay. It got best director. I mean, it's as close to a juggernaut.
Yeah, I'm looking. Okay, so right now, let me read it out loud, because thank God for Google and 5G. I appreciate you, AT&T. Best Picture, winner, Parasite. Let's look at everyone else in this. Better than 1917? No. Better than Ford versus Ferrari? Absolutely not. Better than Joker? Absolutely not. Better than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Hell no. Better than The Irishman? For me, hell no. Better than Little Women? Maybe. Better than Jojo Rabbit? Probably. Better than Marriage Story? Absolutely not. So if I were out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 films, it starts off in 7th or 6th place for me.
And again, that's a good field. So yeah, and that, it's a stat field. It's not a great movie.
I forgot that Ford versus Ferrari was in that category.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. The movie that I thought got squeezed out really unfairly was Marriage Story.
Yeah. I really did. I didn't.
That had great acting, great writing. It was what it was. It was powerful. It was funny.
I mean,
it was always going to get squeezed out either by some big budget thing or either by a movie. When Parasite comes along, hey, it's even more indie than Marriage Story.
Yeah,
like, it's losing everywhere. It was completely boxed out.
And you know what? And this is a lot of my coworkers at the FCP school in which I work agreed with me on this. There's something about reading subtitles for 3 hours, man, or 2 hours. There's something about it where it can take a little bit away from the story. But I wanted to actually get to that point with Best Actor. Because you made a great point about
Marriage
Story.
So I'll let you roll around here.
Yeah, I'm just going to go through them because I have them all up now. So Best Actor category, Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Antonio Banderas, Pain and Glory. Did not see that, so I can't speak on that. Adam Driver, Marriage Story. Jonathan Pryce, Two Popes. Ex-Girlfriend loves it. I haven't seen it myself. The winner was Joaquin Phoenix.
Who's Joker?
With Joker.
Joaquin Phoenix.
I don't know. And I liked Joker a lot. I spoke highly of it. If you're telling me Joker versus Adam Driver and Marriage Story, I think I got to go with Adam Driver, man. And I might, and this one is, I caught some heat for this with a buddy of mine. I think it's a lot closer with Leonardo DiCaprio and Phoenix than people want to admit.
Yes.
But I think I have Adam Driver over
both. And I think, you know, there's that old joke that's sent up so great in Tropic Thunder, where there was for many years this notion in Hollywood that you had to, the showier the part, whether you're playing someone who's, you know, dying or whatever, they had almost, I don't want to use this word, but almost like a gimmick hook. And you know, Joker, because there is this character, it's quite a showy character. Whereas, and I'm now going to say DiCaprio, you have a tougher role when you have something underplayed. Because I think, unfortunately for DiCaprio, you can easily watch it and go, also because he's playing an actor, that these dudes are just playing themselves, and that ain't hard. So you're sitting there thinking, but actually it is hard to convincingly play, to underplay
yourself. An actor playing an actor.
But I also think, too, I think your point, I think Adam Driver played...
That was a great role, man.
It's a great role. It was so well written, and yet... It was convincing in a way. He didn't have the opportunity to go over the top because you wouldn't buy it then. You'd be going, no, people are not like real. Because he had to play a real dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I felt like you're right. In that category, man, he really got squeezed.
Any husband or any boyfriend who's been in love with
and the same for Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was about to say. But I just feel like anyone who's ever been in a couple, who's been in any type of argument or dispute, who watched that film, is going with that film.
It was so
spot on.
Real. It was spot on. It felt like, oh, I've had that conversation.
Absolutely. Or you've been there, or you've seen it,
I get where he's
absolutely.
Coming from. I understand what she's saying.
Absolutely.
There.
And I'm just a little, and this is the last point because I wanted to move on to another few. I'm still a little salty that Joker is the comic book movie that broke through. There's just a part of me that
it feels a little bit of a cheat, doesn't it?
Yeah, like Robert Downey Jr. has nothing for Iron Man, and this guy comes in this film.
I may be wrong now. I'm gonna try and put into words where I think you're coming from, because this is how I see it. The great comic book movies are unabashedly comic book movies, and even The Dark Knight.
Yeah,
for all that Christopher Nolan did with it by making it serious and whatever, it is ultimately a comic book movie.
Yeah,
I think Joker. Is very clever, and then it takes the comic book conceit and concept and turns it into something else.
Yeah.
But at that moment, well, then it's not really a comic book movie. It's a bit like if you have James Bond show up doing like some sort of comedy.
Yeah,
it's James Bond.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that.
I get it.
I felt like it was like, you're right. Other dudes who've been in movies that have just been unabashed comic book movies, well, they don't get any love because it's a comic book movie.
But I would just say this, with both films come out this year, and even though you're absolutely right, technically they're still both comic book films, I would say Robert Downey Jr.'s individual acting in that billion-dollar budget film was as good as Mr. Phoenix.
I'm going to leave that there. Well, I'm going to say this to you too, and I don't mean this because I don't want to hammer someone who was very good, and it's not their fault. I've got a theory that if compared against your own work, if this isn't your best movie, then you know something, you shouldn't be winning. Someone else should be winning the Oscar.
That's fair.
And I think to your point, I would find it hard to name. I think Robert Downey Jr. was great in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not his biggest fan, but I'm struggling to find one or two other movies where he's better than he was as Iron Man.
Yeah.
Likewise, De Niro was great in The Irishman.
Yeah.
Pacino was great in The Irishman. But you know something? Compared against their own, there's been other movies they've been better in. Whereas I think, and again, I don't want to suddenly make this into like an Adam Driver whining thing. I can't name three movies. I can name movies where Driver's been as good as he was in Marriage Story, but I'm not going, oh, no, he was much better in such and such.
I agree. Another category, Best Supporting Actor, won by Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which we both agreed he was money in it. I will say Tom Hanks in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
That was a packed category, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you got Pacino, Pesci, Anthony Hopkins, and Brad Pitt. The only reason I can support that win is because he's the coolest. But I could have picked anyone in that one.
Is this true? Yeah, you can't get it wrong there.
I could have gone Pesci. I could have gone Pacino. I definitely could have gone Tom Hanks. And I'm an Anthony Hopkins guy, so whatever, he could be at the 7-11.
I'll be honest with you, and I'm now going to, and again, I don't mean this at all, because I thought Pitt was great in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I also feel, and I know the system doesn't work this way, I almost feel like if Pitt's going to win, then DiCaprio has to win too. If you're a voter, you can't sit there and separate those two things.
I don't, especially with the way the characters were intertwined.
But I will say this. We both loved Brad Pitt and Ad Astra. And in a strange way, well, you can make a case to me that actually Ad Astra was his better individual performance.
That's true.
I'm going to say this too. Now, I was very critical, and I liked The Irishman, but I didn't feel bad when it kind of got shut out because, well, all these dudes have done this before. That being said, I thought Pesci surpassed because he was the one dude where you have this image of him in these movies. Mm-hmm. He was the one guy who completely surpassed that. Mm-hmm. And if there's a loser in that category, if there was someone who you go, not sure they got that right, it would. If I could sit here and go hard in the way I've just made a case for Adam Driver, I'd go hard and make a case for Joe Pesci. But strangely enough, not Al Pacino, because I've seen Al Pacino do that shtick many times.
I agree with that. And I would also just say, what's it called? A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Tom Hanks was money. That's all I can really say about that. Those were two good ones. I think we're both going to definitely agree on Best Actress. I'm sorry, Renee Zellweger for Judy. I never saw that.
And again, I feel a little bit that's Hollywood. Who are the other
Scarlett
nominees?
Scarlett Johansson, Marriage Story.
Yeah.
Come on. Cerise Rosen,
Little Women.
Little Women. Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, which is also a good performance. Charlize Theron, Bombshell. I've seen Marriage Story, Harriet, Bombshell. I have not seen Judy.
And not many people did.
Yeah. I would just say this. I'm going to go see it because it's for her to win. She's got two now.
So I'm not, and again, yeah, I'm no, not, yeah, yeah. I don't like to criticize people who are great. And I don't mean to do that.
Must be a hell of a performance.
But I feel a little bit that this is Hollywood going, well, she's played a real person, so therefore. I feel it gets a bit lazy. Because again, I'm sitting there and I'm going, explain to me again how Scarlett Johansson isn't winning.
I have her as a definite number one in that category. I would put Charlize Theron or Cynthia Erivo for Bombshell and Harriet right after her. But I have Scarlett Johansson way ahead, like blowout, easy win.
And I'm going to say this. This is an interesting thing now, and I don't want to pick on, and we're not, because I think we're being very, very fair. Mm-hmm. I have a problem that Parasite cleaned up. Mm-hmm. By all accounts, it's supposed to be a very good movie. But even then, I'm not quite sure. Like, there's that old conventional wisdom that if something's the best movie, then by extension, that dude should win Best Director. And I'm not saying I agree with that.
Yeah.
But by that extension, too, how can you have the best director, the best movie, the best screenplay, and not a single one of your cast were nominated?
I think that's a great point.
Best supporting actor or actress? And I'm like, seriously? Seriously. I understand that you get locked out of music and editing and fashion, but not one member of the cast of the best movie is
not even nominated.
The same thing happened. I'm trying to think. I can't think of any other years where it's been this clear where
the director was a star and all of the actors were trash, is what you're telling me.
And I think at some moment there's now this sort of reverse bias. Well, no one knows who these dudes are, so we're not going to give them a nomination. No, you don't get to do that.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. I'm sorry.
It's inconsistent.
And you've been brave enough to put it in all those other categories, and you've ended up voting for it.
Yeah.
So you're sitting around going, and again, I do look at that. I look at the best actress category, and it feels, I felt like Judy was like this very safe choice.
Yeah. Should have been Scarlett. There were three left that I definitely wanted to touch on. I'm going to start with the best director that you just said, because I think you listen to this category. Sam Mendes, 1917. Martin Scorsese, The Irishman. Todd Phillips, Joker. Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Bong Joon-ho, Parasite. I've seen all of them. And
who'd you have given it to? Mendes, right? Because technically, what do you think about that film?
Yeah, I think I'm going Mendes.
It should be Mendes, but you know something? I'm going to say this.
Tarantino's close.
I'm going to say this now.
Yeah.
Hollywood are really weird. Because I think directors is just voted on by directors. Best picture is everyone. And certain categories are everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, I'm not sure, maybe best director is everyone. Directors who do a great job doing something like technical and difficult never get the love.
Yeah.
Like, I still find it mind-boggling that Christopher Nolan has not won an Oscar, didn't win an Oscar for Dunkirk, and didn't win an Oscar for Inception.
Which is absolutely insane.
And so by that standard, I'm sitting here going, Sam Mendes pulled off basically an action war movie, but also tried to make it look like it was all one shot, and he got away with it, and
gets nothing for it.
And he gets nothing for it. And again, I'm not knocking the winner. I'm like, you know, I don't get that.
What I know for certain is Parasite, directing-wise, would be my fifth out of that category.
Okay.
I could easily go Mendes. I could easily go Tarantino. I'm probably picking one of those as my number one. My number two is probably Scorsese. My number three is Joker. And then since those are tied, it would put fifth, would put Bong Joon-ho at fifth.
I mean, the fact that Mendes had won everything else, I thought that was a done deal.
Yeah, me too. And the last one I definitely wanted to speak on was Best Supporting Actress, which was Laura Dern with Marriage Story. Kathy Bates, Richard Jewell, didn't see that. Margot Robbie, Bombshell, was really good. Scarlett Johansson, Jojo Rabbit, was good. And Florence Pugh with Little Women.
I don't have a problem with Laura Dern winning. Yeah, I'm glad Marriage Story got something.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of showy. Yeah. You know, you have like this great sort of very memorable moment. I saw Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think the amazing thing about Scarlett Johansson in Jojo Rabbit was you sat there, and it's weird. If you see that and Marriage Story within 3 weeks of each other, and again, people win categories for the movie they're in, not the other movies that they're not nominated for. But when you see those, when you see her do those two things, you go, that dude's got talent.
Absolutely.
That guy can play. You know what I mean? He didn't have a great game.
Yeah.
He had a great month.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
You absolutely.
Know? Yeah. Everyone lights it up one night. Anyone absolutely. Can get hot for a quarter.
Absolutely. She killed it in two films.
Yeah.
That are very different and demand very different things.
Yes.
Are covering completely different topics.
Yes.
While, and no one's going to give her credit for this, while advertising Black Widow, is going to say, while those two films are coming out, and she's pushing a whole different film.
Yep.
So I have to give it to her for that and appearing on SNL.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have to say that Scarlett Johansson, I hope she has something coming out in the future. I know it's not going to be Black Widow that can really get her her Oscar, because I really felt like she deserved one. I absolutely do agree. And Adam Driver, I think he's just going to give us more classic performances moving forward, because he's already done showing a lot of range.
Fighting, isn't that?
And he's young enough to do this for a very long time. He's nowhere near his potential.
There's no turkeys in his resume.
Yeah.
There's not. I mean, we can sit, and I know it's an unfair thing when dudes who are a lot older. So I'm going to try and I don't know. I see Adam Driver a little bit like I see DiCaprio.
Yeah, I was about to say Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what the material is.
Money.
They are the
last 10 films are money. Everything since Titanic's been money.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Revenant, Inception, Shutter Island.
Double, every time out.
Everything, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. And Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Which was, I thought, underrated in all of this. Yeah, man. We discuss that all the time. It hasn't been in a bad one.
The Departed works.
The Departed, and I forget
because of him
and
Alec Baldwin. That's why it works. But of course, everyone in The Departed just remembers Nicholson.
Yeah.
But it works because of DiCaprio.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredible. And Adam, it's weird because I never would have thought, and this is probably going to sound a specific type of way, Adam Driver has a look to him. And I always thought to get to that level, and even regardless of how good of an actor you would be, you would need to have that Hollywood kind of look, like a Damon or a...
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, and he doesn't have it, and it's working for him.
These are all franchise quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
They all are, yeah.
Can I read it really quick? Because I have Leo's thing up right now. So we're talking about, and I forgot a few of these. So Titanic, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, The Revenant, Wolf of Wall Street, Inception, The Departed, Django Unchained, which he was in.
I forgot
about that one. What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Which is
good, dude.
Yeah.
Shutter Island, The Great Gatsby, which he was good at. Have you seen The Great Gatsby?
No.
Everyone on every American.
But the next one, but you're probably going to name one I have seen, and I'm like, he should have won for that too.
Blood Diamond.
Yeah, he's great in that.
Gangs of New York.
Never saw that.
Good film.
Really?
Ooh, you should watch that one. J. Edgar.
That's that? Right.
Yeah. Another good one. Let's see if there's anything.
The Aviator.
The Aviator just came up. And these are all like in the last like 10 years. I'm really not even adding some of the other films that he's been in.
And again, it's interesting. Unlike say, The Departed, which is a movie, belongs to about four or five different characters and needs about 10 different actors to make it work. The Aviator has 10 other actors that are doing some great work, including Baldwin, including Alan Alda, including all kinds of different people. And yet that movie, for 2 3/4 hours, You buy what it's selling because DiCaprio is in frame every moment, and the whole movie has to hang on him. There's no second banana. Yeah. If he's no good, then the all the performances apart. Of the other nine people are wasted. Yeah. But he is first class.
And I'm going to give you another two quick nuggets as well. First off, the bear scene in The Revenant is as good of an act. When I saw how they did that with the green screen, I'm like, holy crap, holy crap. But I'm going to give you a sneaky nugget with Brad Pitt that I feel like a lot of people miss. Brad Pitt was money at the end of 12 Years a Slave. He was in that film.
People forget, which he also, I think he was an executive. Yeah. He was either a producer or an executive producer of 12 Years a Slave as well.
In the same way that I think that Leonardo DiCaprio kind of sneaks in Django Unchained when you're not completely aware.
Oh, I think he's great in that.
He's incredible in that film.
He's incredible in that, but he's also...
hilarious.
Because it's Quentin Tarantino, every single dude... Yeah. It was interesting. I was watching something. Can't remember if it was on. It may have been listening to some of the Ringer podcasts where they had Tarantino on, and Tarantino was talking about dudes that he likes to work with because they just get it, and he makes sure that because they get him, at some moment in. Maybe not in this movie, but in the next movie, he's going to throw you something where you go, as an actor, I really want to do this. Django Unchained has so many different dudes.
It's so good.
Where he's like giving everyone, here's your scene, and here's your scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean,
Samuel Jackson. There are
Jackson,
a lot. People
White,
need to rewatch.
I mean, you know, Jamie Foxx has done some great work in some different movies, but his work in that movie is
incredible. Could be his best.
Like, there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah. And I always forget the guy's name, the kind of chubby guy. He was in Wolf of Wall Street. He was in
Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill was hilarious in Django Unchained.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Playing the Klansman. That's a good dude. You have to give it. Yeah, don't ever ask me in mine for nothing. That was
it's funny because I've said this before. Yeah. I never liked Inglourious Basterds. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think Christopher Waltz is brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But Django, I like, and every time someone comes into frame, I'm going, this dude is money.
Samuel Jackson was really good.
Yes.
Not going to say any of his quotes, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, and that's the great thing about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
They're all really good. They're all really good.
Everybody. I'm not.
My man, Timothy Oliphant has like two scenes and one character, and he's brilliant.
Exactly.
Luke Perry. Who got left off the montage in the Oscars?
Yeah, which is weird.
What are you guys doing? How can you get that wrong?
But they had time for Eminem.
Yeah. And I love Eminem.
I do too. I'm an Eminem fan. Yeah, I think he's top three ever, maybe number one.
What is going on here?
Yeah, good stuff, man. Good stuff.
All right, so the Oscars need some work. Maybe next year we'll fix it. Movie Richard, anything else? Leave us with something for the month.
Okay.
Anything of
Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder.
What is your prediction?
I think Wilder's going to knock him out because even though Tyson Fury is the better boxer.
4 rounds, 8 rounds, or the distance?
9 rounds.
I think it's going deep, but I don't think it goes to the end.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you. Someone's going down.
I think.
Someone's going down.
If Tyson hadn't done the WWE and all this other stuff, I'm picking Tyson by outpointing him. I think this Tyson Fury, who's gotten a taste of that sweet $17 million from WWE, is like, I'm just going to take this $30 million and
get out of here. It's true. The money makes.
And then
you.
I have.
Really, so going deep, but a
going
knockout.
Deep. And one quick thing to add to that. I have Anthony Joshua beating Pulev, and I have Deontay Wilder knocking out Anthony Joshua in England this summer.
All right, we'll write all them down because when off-track betting becomes legal in this part of America, there's
don't
your trifecta.
Don't bet on the Fury fight. That's going to be rough.
There is your trifecta.
Don't bet on the Fury fight.
Until March, Movie Richard, say goodbye to your fans.
Appreciate it, man. Absolutely.
This has been Movie Richard's Movie Month, a production of the Atlantic Voice Network. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice, via email at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and on the blog at AtlanticVoice.net. Movie Richard's Movie Month.